This episode is a return to the minutia that I love, again with Mike Gribanoff. We go deep for about 25 minutes or so on Sindarius Thornwell's strengths and weaknesses. Then I can't resist ranting about the NBA Combine critics. It is what it is, people. Anyway, thanks for the most recent reviews on iTunes. Keep them coming, please. I'm trying to have these intros make a little more sense, so I'll be experimenting with how I do them. Please just have a little bit of patience. As always, I'm your host, Sean Darenthal, and you're listening to Ode to Odin, the NBA Draft Podcast. Hey, Mike, how's it going?
Pretty good. Pretty hot out here in LA right now.
All right. Well, I'm glad you're inside in AC somewhere, I hope. Going to talk Sindarius Thornwell with me. I'm excited to talk about him primarily because I have been all over the place with him. At the beginning of the season, he wasn't even close to being on my radar. I know he was on yours and a mutual friend Ben Rubin's radar, and you guys were trying to get me onto him, and I was still on the PJ Dozier bandwagon, which I'm not sure that I'm completely off of yet, but Thornwell probably is the better of the two prospects. So let's start in on the deep dive with him. I'm just gonna do a quick intro. If you don't know, then you probably weren't watching any of the NCAA tournament. Obviously, he took South Carolina. I mean, not just him, but he's the best player. Took them to the Final Four. He's a 6'4 senior guard, power guard, wing. I don't know how we want to classify him. He measured at the combine at 212 pounds and a pretty good 6'10 wingspan. In high school, he came out as a pretty decent recruit, like a four-star guy, but I think I remember him a little bit getting a little bit more pub than just that. He played at Oak Hills, completely dominated. Obviously, there at Oak Hills, you're like really in the spotlight. So he's 22 years old already. He has a November birthday, so he'll be 23 at the beginning of the NBA season. He's just, as kind of like a brief summary before we launch in, incredibly polished guard. He lacks kind of like the normal NBA wing athleticism. He isn't a great offensive player, although he scored 22 points a game, something like that, led the team in scoring. He was the SEC Player of the Year, and I think mainly because he is a great defensive player. As I said, he took them to the Final Four, South Carolina. I think publicly, that's when his stock like really, really took off. I would love to be like inside of an NBA front office, you know, and like see exactly like where they had him before, you know, kind of on my radar, he really took off. But obviously you and Ben were on him, you know, long before that. So why don't we start off with offensive strengths? We'll go offensive strengths, offensive weaknesses, defensive strength, defensive weaknesses, then we'll project him. Why don't you start, Mike, with offensive strengths? What do you think are going to be the things that he'll be able to be good at in the NBA on offense?
Well, like you said, he came into college with the reputation from Oak Hill. He kind of, I think he played some point guard there, and early in his college career as a prospect, he was almost considered a point guard by some. So he'll definitely, you know, he'll make the right pass. He's not like super creative or an amazing ball handler, but he'll make the right read and he'll find the open guy all the time. And he could definitely like drive closeouts. Yeah. He has no problem, like you said, very strong player. So he's not going to get pushed off his spots. Embraces physicality, really good on the offensive glass, you know, all these things. You know, people call him a 3-and-D wing, and I think that will definitely be his role in the future, mm-hmm. whereas in South Carolina, he was obviously the primary guy.
Yeah.
But even if he doesn't shoot a really high percentage, you know, Jay Crowder and Robert Covington shoot 35% career. If he gets to that, he's going to be an amazing player. Yeah. Like, not amazing, but a really good player.
Yeah.
But, like, even, like, Corey Brewer's career 28%, Mo Harkless career 31%, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope career 33%. And Thornwell, he could drive closeouts. He's strong enough to finish at the rim. He could play make a little bit once again. So I think there's a few things to like with him, even offensively.
Yeah, passing is definitely the first thing that I have. Just like a little bit more. He can go both hands, one-handed really well. Touch pass, he can do like over the top of the defense really well. In transition, like definitely, you know, always has his head up. Like he's just a very, very polished player. So all of his skills, I think, come from pretty good feel, like pretty good to really good feel. I mean, he doesn't have like amazing vision, and their offense really wasn't about that. You know, he didn't have kind of that opportunity. But in pick and rolls, he was fine. Like, over-the-top hook passes with the right hand especially was, like, really accurate. Getting up in the air, throwing a few, like, weak side passes or whatever. Like, he's definitely adept at that, very capable of doing that kind of thing. Other stuff just, like, about the general feel. His handle doesn't really ever get sped up. Like you said, he's really calm. He's really strong. And so that kind of combined with his polish and confidence in the dribble, he works out of the post a lot, something that I'm not sure that he's going to be able to do in the NBA, but he works out of the post, I think, considerably. And so kind of that extra dribble in the lane when it's a little bit crowded, when most guys would pick up or, you know, off a dribble, most guys would do one, maybe two dribbles to get a little bit deeper and pick up and then go into a fairly predictable drive. He keeps his drive, you know, alive a little bit longer. And he's, I think, most of the scoring that he does at the rim and most of the foul calls that he gets, that's the other thing, right? He goes to the line a ton. His free throw rate is like nearly 60%, which is crazy high. So I think most of that stuff is just like craft. He doesn't really have the explosion to finish over guys. And while his length is decent, like I said before, the 6'10 wingspan, it's not anything that really allows him to get over the top of the defense. It's all just like little head fakes, little bumps, because like you said, he's so strong, gets guys kind of out of position, freezes guys in the lane, goes up when they're coming down, that kind of thing. So one other thing that I'll add, he is really, really amazing at coming off screens, like reading screens. Like I said, he's just a really polished player. This is one of the aspects where it really, really shone through for me. Reading the screens, well, setting up his man always initially was like perfect, like literally just textbook. Like he's watching some 1970s video or something, right? And then reading, a lot of their offense was like this pseudo motion stuff where they'd swing it from side to side looking for post-ups. And then on the backside, the guard would come off of the baseline, off a pin down, and he would be reading these pin downs perfectly, like curling when he had to into the middle or fading to the corner when the guy would go under. Like it was perfect. Like his decision making is so, so polished. So we'll get to this obviously in weaknesses, but athleticism is going to be kind of the big red flag here. But anything that he can do to make up for that, he's going to make up for with like these perfect little decisions that he's making at everything to absolutely like maximize the athleticism that he does have. Just one other thing to add, offensive strength. He gets to the free throw line a ton, like I said, and he shoots it at a pretty good clip there. He's all 4 years he's been at South Carolina, it's been like 70s, and this last year it's been like 83%. So not bad there. All right, I just talked forever. Offensive weaknesses, we already hit on just kind of the lack of athleticism there. Why don't you continue with either that or other stuff that you see?
With the offensive weaknesses, I mean, a lot of his threes are like pretty close to the college line. Prior to this year, he always shot like either even high 20s, low 30s every year, and that's from the college line. And at the combine, I mean, it's not a great place to be scouting at that scrimmage, but still, you know, they're shooting the NBA three at least, and he had like three or four misses that were like not even close.
Yeah,
his release isn't super quick either. So I mean, you know, like you said, he'll come off like it's almost like the opposite of a flare screen, where he come off and like curl into a free throw, or like you say, he's really good at reading it, and if he needs to, he'll pop out. So they're not gonna run plays like that for him in the NBA though. He's gonna be more like a guy standing on the corner, you know, waiting to spot up. And if he's not shooting at a high percentage, despite what I said, I mean, he's definitely not going to be very effective offensively, at least if he's unable to translate to the NBA three-pointer. That may be an issue with spacing. And, you know, even all those drives that he's so good at and being so crafty, he may lose a lot of those because of the, like you say, he lacks quickness. And if he's not shooting it well, you know, guys are going to be backing off of him. And also, you saying the free throws is definitely a strength for him at the college level, but, you know, a lot of those calls are, like, kind of calls that he probably wouldn't get, especially as a rookie at the NBA level, just, you know, bumping into guys and trying to draw contact and all that. I'm not sure how much of that is going to translate either. I do think, just real quick to the strength, one thing I forgot to say is I think he could play some small ball four, even though he's pretty small.
I wouldn't
go for him like, you know, big minutes, but small stretches here and there in certain matchups, He uses his length so well, and he's so strong, and like I say, he embraces the physicality. He has all these little hand tricks that he does to push guys or not get called for it.
Yeah.
So I think in that spot, he could be fairly effective offensively as a power forward, but obviously you can't really use him there for big minutes in the NBA.
Yeah, I agree. So I think the big offensive weakness, I mean, just, well, there are two. Obviously, the athleticism, which is going to just make everything that he does a little bit harder, like how you touched on. The other thing is shooting. You talked about if the shooting is real, the numbers that he showed this year, if they're real, he could be very good because of the defense, right? The 3-and-D kind of archetype that he'll fill there. But let me just read you the true shooting percentages freshman year through senior year. 49.9%, which is bad. 45.6, which is horrible for true shooting percentage. Again, this isn't field goal percentage, right? This is true shooting percentage, which is incorporating your free throw rate as well. So we're looking for...
I think the average is like 56 or something like that, 55, something like that.
Right. If you're going to be playing the two, like maybe the three in small lineups, or like possibly the four, I guess, in super small lineups, like you said, which I don't think is unreasonable. But yeah, you're definitely, to provide some spacing, you need to be 55 or above, right? Sophomore year, 50.4. And then senior year, finally, 59.0 on actually much higher volume than the other 3 years. So it's weighted more heavily, but still, right? Like freshman through junior, like not good signs. The free throw rate, like I said, has always been there, but shooting poor, especially from three. And like you said, doesn't show a lot of promise from there. Although 39% on like 148 attempts this year, which is a pretty good sample size. So I don't know. I do know. I'm slotting the shooting pretty squarely in the offensive weakness category, right? Like, definitely can improve, but for now, I think you have to say that it's a weakness. You have to lean that way, at least. Like you said, I think there are some problems with the mechanics. They can be a little bit clunky at times. I'm not sure there's a ton of consistency there, but I'm no shot doctor. I don't even know how much I believe in like that mechanics even matter that much. I don't know. But the athleticism definitely matters, right? I think that the lack of explosion hurts him at the rim. Like you said, some of the offensive tricks that he has are not going to translate. He can't finish over guys. He had at the combine, he had a 30.5 max vert, which was like tied for second to last, right? There are a few guys at the combine, actually, they did better than that on just the standstill vert. So that really, really shines through, I think. He's pretty obviously not a great athlete. His first step, I think, is okay. I don't know if I mentioned that, but after that, like, there's no continued acceleration. Mostly just kind of bodying guys all the way to the rim, or posting guys, you know, with like little tricks, that kind of thing. So just general quickness, doesn't have that. Top end speed, doesn't have that either. There's like almost no creation upside for him. The shooting is questionable. That's kind of, I don't know, those are like pretty damning woes, I think. But as I talked about before, the decision making is so polished. On defense, it shines through way more so, I think, than on offense. So let's get to the offensive strengths where most of his value lies. So why don't you talk about where you see him being strong on that end?
Well, like you were saying, he's not super quick offensively, but defensively, extremely quick feet, hyperactive, always moving, great job, anticipation, covering ground, using his length, was one of the best in getting in the passing lanes. Frank Martin's game plan was to cause havoc for opposing teams all year, and it seemed to me that Thornwell would more guard the area around his player than the players themselves. Yeah. Not necessarily like a matchup zone or a zone, but they weren't like switching all the time. But he was really free to roam a lot. Mm. And his anticipation is excellent. Like I said, I've seen him, what I've seen him do several times is he like fake digging down when he's on the strong side corner.
Yeah.
And right as the guard is passing, he'll jump the lane and he'll get the deflection. He got a few guards like that with that move. Very good at defensive communication. You could always see him on the court pointing things out, talking. He blocked 20 shots this year, not at the rim, which is like one of the higher totals I've seen.
That's after crazy. After
some brief research, at least. His overall awareness defensively is extremely high. He's prone to gambling, but that's kind of like part of their scheme. And like he's also great at rebounding position. He always knows where the ball is gonna go off. Should be able to guard at least twos and threes. And I think at times he could switch out on some fours and slower ones.
So I'm gonna try not to just repeat everything you just said in different words, because you just basically read my notes verbatim. He's just an absolute joy to watch. Like after you start doing this in your scouting, you get a little bit frustrated, right, with some of these high-end prospects that you know are so athletic and they're not giving the kind of just effort, like physical exertion, because it's not as if Thornwell is always exerting himself, you know, to the max. Obviously you need to learn how to take plays off, especially somebody with the crazy high like 29% usage rating that he had this year. So he's not always in a perfect stance all the time, but he's locked in, right? Like his decision making is always there. He's always thinking, like the anticipation to cut off perimeter players is so impressive, especially knowing because he's like not that athletic, right? We know that his first step is okay, not super quick. And once you get by him, he can't run with you that well. His length isn't going to bother you that well. But his anticipation to cut people off is uncanny. He honestly looked like probably actually maybe a little bit better than Frank Ntilikina did in the U18 Euro Championship. Cutting off guys in transition who are running full speed, that's crazy hard to do. But I saw him do it multiple times. You almost always get called for the block in that scenario. But he's so strong, he cuts you off, anticipates where you're going to go. He rarely gets like bumped back because of how strong he is. Also, his closeouts, I don't know how this works, to be honest. Like, I'm terrified that in the NBA he's going to close out in the same way. He closes out so hard and so close compared to what I think you probably should do and what most people do. But he never gets burned by. Like, he's always kind of shading to the strong side or shading to the area where there's space, where the guy obviously wants to drive. Like, it's really just kind of unbelievable to watch him work. I think that he's probably the most polished perimeter defender in the entire draft of all the people that I've seen. I know I've said that about Ntilikina before. Josh Jackson obviously has some upside, and he's pretty good. OG Anunoby's good, but lacks a lot of that polish. Isaac can eventually, I think, probably beat everyone as far as like just defensive upside because of his length. But right now, at this very moment, I think Thornwell takes the cake in that regard. Also, big ups, like you said, to Frank Martin. Is really a joy to like watch this team on defense. Also on offense, I thought a lot of their sets are really, really good. There's a lot of spacing there that probably shouldn't be there. Like everything they run is so crisp. The guards all screen really well. So yeah, just as much as I think he's like a complete lunatic, obviously he's a great coach, right? One more thing. Navigating screens, he's by far the best at this. I thought it was Ntilikina, but he's by far the best. Like it's like usually the ball handler and the screen setter are really dictating the situation and the angles and all that stuff, and the defender has to adjust. But he's so strong, prepares like really well in advance before the screen comes, and like angles his body just like perfectly, wraps his arm around the screener to like get under or over, knows exactly what he's doing, never hesitates in that regard. He completely dictates that situation, and they so often don't have to bring a third defender to help on pick and rolls because he blows it up from the get-go. That kind of stuff got me so excited. All right, so let's get to the defensive weaknesses, which like despite like how great he is on defense, I think the defensive weaknesses are actually more impactful on his defensive upside just because, again, the athletic deficiencies are so much there.
I think for the defensive weaknesses, he's not going to be like a shutdown, like one-on-one man guy.
Yeah.
In my opinion, in the NBA, like you said, because of athleticism. And also he likes to gamble. Like his main thing is like getting in the passing lanes, you know, helping out on blocks, getting that rebound. He is very good at navigating through screens, but then he'll like to try to swipe the ball and he'll end up, you know, getting crossed over sometimes. That way, sometimes he'll run into a screen like that.
Yeah.
Sometimes he moves his feet so much because, like I said, he's so hyperactive. He gets one of his feet in a bad position sometimes. Like you say, he's super active, like on closeouts and stuff like that. So that'll kind of get him messed up, or like shooters chasing people off screens. Again, he's almost guarding the area around his guy as opposed to exactly his guy. And they're always trying to, like, their thing is to try to get guys to take quick jump shots. So they're not super worried of, you know, sticking super close to the shooters. So yeah. stuff like that. But it's mostly, to me, scheme based. And even that stuff, it's I would think he could improve upon. But obviously, the athletic ability is like the big issue. But in my opinion, team defense is a lot more valuable than being just a good on-ball defender. So I think he'll be able to bring good value in the NBA either way, at least on the defensive end.
Yeah, I just think it's going to come down to the fact that his top-end speed is like really, really slow for an NBA player. I think it's slow for a college player. It's going to be horrendously slow for an NBA player. I saw him try to pressure a few times where he got in a situation where he had to either press or he got caught in the backcourt like with his man for some reason because they were, you know, trying to push the ball off a make or something like that. And he could not turn and run with the guy at all. Like it was just, it was like a no contest. And I just think in the half court in the NBA, offenses, like coaches know, right? That's just blood in the water. They're going to put him in pick and roll after pick and roll, try to either get him switched onto a quicker ball handler or just make him chase over the top, you know, kind of thing. I don't know. That really bothers me. The length is fine, but like the explosion is not. So the functional length, I think, is pretty bad. And I don't know how much of the rebounding is going to translate. Like he kind of reminds me of Kevin Love in the way that he prepares for rebounds, like before the shot's coming. You know, he's like you were saying, little dirty tricks. I don't know. He's not at the Kevin Love status, right? Like Kevin Love is like the absolutely ideal of that, right? The non-athletic guy that can rebound. So I don't know if that's going to translate either. His contests, although he's had a lot of blocks, like you said, there are a lot of contests on closeouts that just are completely ineffective because he's not even getting close to it. Like if he has to close out in a long ways, or sometimes if he's guarding a longer player. So sometimes they would play this 3-2 zone where he would be at the bottom, not a 2-3 zone, but a 3-2 zone. So he would be at the bottom as one of the forwards or, you know, one of the bigs or whatever. And as he would try to get out to the corner and then back to the paint, sometimes like his contests would just be really ineffective because he can't get up to bother the shot at all in transition, like running hip to hip with a guy and then trying to get up and contest his shot. Just, you can tell like there's just a giant gap in athleticism, like the explosion there off one foot. And yeah, I guess that's it. So let's go into projections. What do you see his role? I know we've talked about this a little bit as we've gone over it, but what do you see his role being in the NBA if he's going to succeed? Like, what is the successful scenario for him?
I think a lot of the criticisms, like you just line up for him, like on the defensive end and even somewhat on the offensive end with some of the athleticism concerns, is the same stuff we kind of heard for Jay Crowder coming out. And I know you don't like comparisons, and I'm not saying he's going to be like Crowder because they have a lot of differences, definitely. And Crowder's probably more athletic. But I think something like in that 3-and-D, but, you know, more the D part of the 3-and-D. That would be obviously his role. That looks like his role to me.
Yeah, so, I mean, it really just depends on the shot. If the shot continues to develop, if he can push it out to the NBA 3, well, then obviously he's going to be a very, very good team defender. And if he's not, if he doesn't have a bad matchup where he's kind of unplayable because he has to guard like Isaiah Thomas for some stupid reason, or he's constantly getting switched onto Mike Conley or something like that, right? Then he's definitely going to be a good wing player, especially because of his strength and intelligence. Like you said, he's going to be able to play down a position almost always, sometimes two positions, I think. But it's all just going to depend on that shot. And obviously, because of his age, you don't really expect any growth at all. And so I guess kind of the major theme as we're talking, like you hit on this a bunch, and I think I kind of hit on it a bunch as well. The things that he's really good at, I don't know that they matter as much in the NBA because they're all little things that you can learn. Now, not everybody learns to be the kind of decision maker that he is. Not everyone has the kind of anticipation that he has. But the more important stuff that you quote unquote can't teach, you know, as cliche as that is, it's true. I think some of the more important boxes he's not checking. So I think his weaknesses in some regards outweigh his strengths, if that makes sense. And that scares me a little bit.
I kind of disagree because the defensive instincts he has are not easily teachable, like we see with Andrew Wiggins, who we were promised this amazing defensive player. And, you know, like there's a lot of athletic, Rudy Gay, you know, a lot of athletic players out there who, you know, have the length, the athleticism to be a great defensive player, but they never are, whether it's effort or they just don't have the instincts. It's not that easy to just, you know, learn that. You know, it's obviously you could learn like the plays and how to close out the footwork and all that, but to execute in the moment and to read the offense and know what you're doing exactly, I think it's not really teachable. And the fact that he has it is pretty valuable. Definitely agree about the jump shot, though, because we know from past, you know, statistical research and stuff like that, that guys that improve in their last year of college as seniors, as 22, 23-year-olds, that usually is a little bit of a fluke and, you know, doesn't really translate. And yeah. Also, more on the free throws, I forgot to say that, first of all, SEC had some of the worst officials in the entire college basketball. You know how bad college basketball officials are.
So you're saying in Thurlow's favor or not in his favor?
No, not in his favor as far as the free throws, I'm saying, because just as a senior, being in that conference for so long, I think he kind of earned a lot of respect from the officials that maybe instead of making the call that they would normally make, they kind of favor him a little bit, you know, maybe subconsciously. Like I said, not the best officials in the SEC. So that probably won't translate. But the defense, I think it's going to be a big strength. And I do not think it's just easily teachable, the type of high instincts he has. Like you said, he's probably right now probably the best perimeter defender in this class.
Yeah, that's a good point. So, yeah, maybe I should have said it a little bit differently. I think you're totally right. So as far as the teachability stuff goes, I think that if you take somebody athletic, you can teach them, what, like 40%, 60% of what Thornwell is instinctually on defense, mentally on defense, and they will be more effective than an unathletic but very decisive and polished defensive player. Does that make sense? I think his upside is like so capped that this decision-making stuff can only take you so far. If you can't react, if you can't run with guys, if you can't turn your hips, if you can't reach a certain level to like contest shots, if you can't rebound, you know, your decision-making and all that stuff can only take you so far. Whereas if you're athletic, if you're like a PJ Dozier, then maybe I can teach you to be 50% of, you know, kind of the mental player that Thornwell is. And you might be just as, if not more, effective. Because I think that more often than not, you see that in the NBA. You see athletes who aren't polished, like they're making tons of mistakes, but they're being played over guys like Thornwell for a reason.
Well, I mean, who are the top perimeter defenders? I mean, obviously Kawhi, but I'm saying like somebody like Robert Covington, he is like a high-end athlete. Somebody like
yeah, that's a good point.
Bruce Bowen. And then later in his career, he's not a high-end athlete. I mean,
but I think Bruce Bowen was way more athletic than Thornwell and longer, though.
Yeah. That's like, if you think Thornwell is just completely like Dedrick Lawson or something like that athletically, I don't think he's that bad. Like, I think he's fine. Like, I don't think on ball I think it might be a little bit of an issue for him. Like you said, especially in the playoffs when they're going to try to go after him with the guards. But in the regular season, especially, like, it's not going to really be an issue big time. You could always put him on the weaker guy if there's, like, I don't know, LeBron. Like, who are these great super fast wings that are going to even kill him? But even besides that, like I say, the team defense and high-end instincts is what really matter. And, like, all these guys that get underdrafted, like, that's what people said about Draymond Green, that he's too fat and, you know, he's too small. You know? So
that's a good point.
I think
Draymond has a little bit more hops and crazy length. So he's a little bit different, and I don't want to go pick the next Draymond Green. Like, using him as the example is a little bit dangerous. But you make a good point. I think on defense, I think you're right. He will be fine. I don't know if, like, the upside is there. I'm worried about it. But I think that argument also goes to, like, the offensive end. I think he's going to really struggle to finish. I think attacking closeouts for him is going to be difficult. I think he's just going to have to shoot a three and be a good ball mover in sets, right? Like, in sets, he's going to make everything a little more effective, everything a little more crisp. He sets great screens. He's going to be able to make the good decision whether to swing it one more pass or to dump it inside or whatever, right? Like, hit cutters. He's going to be able to do that stuff really well. That's how he's going to help an offense, not by any kind of thing that you might think of as being athletic, right? Like, so he's going to be, I don't know, let's say, like, upside, or, like, if he sticks in a league, he's Joe Ingles, right?
I don't know. I think
Thormel has more functional athleticism, because I think you're a little bit underrating his length. I think he has good length, and I think he uses his length really well. Like you also, that's another thing I disagree a little bit. Like you said, he doesn't really have functional length. I don't know exactly. Maybe you meant something else by it, but I think he uses his length excellent. Like he has quick hands, and he's always got his arms outstretched. You know, he's always getting into close to the ball, trying to deflect and get in guys' faces and all that.
So, like, have you ever played against a much, much smaller player? Like maybe like playing against my younger brother. His contests don't mean anything, right? It's almost as if I'm all alone because I'm not bothered by it at all. And it's like that. A lot of times I was actually a little bit struck by how much his contests, especially at the rim, especially if he's guarding the guy all the way to the rim, or it's in transition, or even in help situations, he would go to the rim and try to contest, and it would be like, it wouldn't really deter the shot at all because he was, you know, a couple inches below the rim or whatever contesting, or like the guy was, you know, 4 inches above the contest, and it didn't matter. I guess that's what I mean by the functional length or whatever. He has a decent arm span, but his verticality is such that it like takes away from his ability to reach like the heights that might deter a shot. Does that make sense?
Yeah, at the rim, I'll agree. And I also agree that his finishing, I still think if he shoots it all right, even, I think he could drive closeouts because he has a okay first step, and he's pretty crafty, like has little moves off his pivot foot and stuff like that, pump fakes. Mm-hmm. But when he gets to the rim, he has no lift at all. I'll agree with that too. Like, yeah, like obviously like 30 and a half max vertical. Like Jonathan Gian had a 31 no-step vertical. Like, and that's a 7'3" center.
All right. We definitely beat that one to death. This is the kind of stuff that I love. This is why I made the podcast. This is the kind of stuff that gets me really excited. So if this drives away listeners, well, then so be it. I don't know. I was never really planning on making tons of money from this podcast anyway. So, but maybe we should move on before we lose any more listeners than we already did. So let's just project him kind of stupidly, you know, not that we really have a crystal ball or anything. Where do you think he's going to be drafted, and where do you kind of have to, where do you have him on your board or tier system or whatever?
I think after the tough shooting at the combine, he'll probably slide down somewhere like mid early second, something like that. But for me, I'm obviously a little bit higher on him. I don't know. I haven't done a big board. I'm working on my big board right now, probably somewhere like maybe late teens, early 20s. I'm definitely higher on him than consensus is.
Okay, so if you guys don't know, Mike put out a tier system, what is it, like over a month ago now? On my website, otoodin.com. Go check that out. I obviously, like you just said, Mike, you haven't updated that at all. Where did you have him then? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was like in the mid-20s, but there was a lot of guys like Mikal Bridges, DeAnthony Melton.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right, that didn't declare. Okay, so I think I can,
and also I mean, I'm kind of moving down too after he, like he can't shoot. I don't know if he could shoot the NBA three, so I'll probably move him a couple of spots down, even from then, even outside the guys declaring. But yeah, sorry, go on.
No worries. So I think kind of like you said, he'll probably go mid second to early second round, but I can see somebody taking a gamble on him, looking for the next Malcolm Brogdon, right, and take him at the end of the first. I think as much as I sounded like I really hated him, and I am worried about those things that I talked about, I think that his defensive floor is high enough, and you know, the question mark whether he can shoot is intriguing enough to where he could, you know, provide spacing and that kind of sealed team defense that allows you to stay in a rotation in the playoffs. That's so important. So I don't mind gambling the later the draft goes. I don't mind taking him between like 20 and like pick 35, I think, is where I would probably have him solidified. You know, well, I guess what I'm saying is that's not solidified, and maybe I'll pare that range down a little bit as the draft gets closer. But in that late third of the first and like the very, very early second is probably where I have him. So, all right, let's go to really quickly. I haven't talked about the draft combine with anybody. So let's talk about it. I know that you've seen a lot of it. I tried to watch some of the scrimmage and I just said, screw this, man. Like, no way. Like, my time is way too valuable for this. So I want to ask you your opinion on, like, what is actually valuable about the draft combine? Is there anything that we should actually, like, is it hurting us to look at this? Is this just information that doesn't mean anything that's kind of clouding our judgment?
I got to ask you first. If you're on a train and the conductor or whatever, the driver dies, what do you do?
I have no idea. Is this a trick? Is this like a trick question? What's going on? This is some like Russian test or something? What's going on here?
No, this is an interview question. The NBA teams.
Was it Frank Mason? Was it him or is that somebody else?
Yeah. Frank Mason had the one, how would he like to die? But I read a few of them that were crazy like that.
Yeah, that stuff's insane. Come on, man. Like, I think we overvalue that kind of stuff. So, like, what is valuable about the combine? There must be something, right? Like, what do you think is valuable?
I think you value everything a little bit, but you just don't. You got to make sure not to hype it. And especially, like, the day after, like, that week, you know you're going to hype it. Like, I was, like, thinking about Jan. I'm like, should I have him in the late first, second? I'm like, no. But, you got to look at everything. All the information you could possibly get, you always got to look at. But, I mean, it depends. If it's like, you know, the guy like Hamadou Diallo, you know the guy could jump in the real game situations, and he comes out with a 45-inch vertical, that's pretty good. Like, yeah, okay, yeah. You really know you could jump. But, like, Pat Connaughton jumps 46 inches, it's like, cool, good for him, I guess. What, he's still going to just stand there and shoot threes, you know? Yeah. So you just got to look at it. Case by case.
Yeah. So I have like a whole rant prepared. We don't have time for this. I'm not going to go through it. A whole rant prepared about people talking about how do we fix the combine. I think this is such a stupid question. I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't be so venomous. Sometimes I do let this stuff kind of get to me. And then maybe in my head, as I'm like arguing with myself about it, I kind of overblow it. So I should just relax. I don't hate anybody for asking this question. It's fine, whatever. I do think it's like, it's a little bit frustrating just because like what's the information that you want? Like, so in fixing the combine, right, we're talking about getting the top guys there. We want we want Fultz to go in the 5-on-5. We want to see Ball, like we want to see his max vert or something. Like, I don't know. This stuff just like doesn't hold any weight for me. Anything that we want to know about them, we pretty much already do know about them, except for the medical and maybe some of the interview stuff, right? But I think we super overvalue the interview stuff. I think the social aspect of stuff, there's tons of psychological experiments to where like humans just aren't good decision makers based off like social stuff in like certain contexts. I think this wholly falls in that category. Like, what is it that we don't know about these guys besides the medical stuff, which gets into like a slightly moral, like legal problematic area, right? Like, these guys don't have any reason to like give you that kind of stuff. I don't know. I just, unless you're like Harry Giles and you're trying to prove that your knees are fine. I don't know. I just have a problem with us wanting to somehow fix it, incentivize these top guys to go. Look, they're not even part of the union yet. They're not obligated in any way under the collective bargaining agreement. So like, we don't really even have like a legal argument. If you try to make it financial, if you try to make it in some other way, like really hurt them, I think there's actually like a potential lawsuit there, right? So I don't know. I said I wouldn't do my rant. I kind of just did my rant. So let me just ask you, because you know so many of the guys in the second, like late second, guys that aren't even going to be drafted, you like know everything about, who didn't get an invite to the combine that matters?
I didn't go super hard with this one. I think I wrote it down in the notes. It was like the ones I thought of were like Sterling Brown, Nigel Williams-Goss. There's a few like international guys that didn't go just because they're still playing, like Nolakin, right, or Quirks, and like obviously the top guys. But those guys got an invite. They just didn't go because for whatever reason they don't want to hurt their stock or they're right, still playing. But otherwise, not too many. Like, it was, they do a pretty decent job. Like, yeah, like Sterling Brown, Nigel Williams-Goss. Like, I probably look at them late second, but they're not like, I'm not super missing them. You know, oh, I didn't get a exact measurement for them, like you said. I don't care that much, right, even though I would be interested in the verticals for the top guys, because that's like the one that we don't have for everybody. But I mean, it's not huge. I'm not going to change my outlook in a great way, even if, you know, Markel Fultz only jumps 35 max instead of 40 or whatever, you know.
Right. So what are the things that kind of jogged you, that kind of spurred you on to maybe change how you were thinking or like go deeper in somebody? For me, it was Hamidou Diallo. I mean, obviously, we all knew he was super athletic. I saw him get to like some rebounds in some FIBA game last summer or whatever that was like freaking amazing. Flew in from the perimeter, snatched something like out of the air, like way above everybody else's hands. So obviously we know that he's athletic, but I didn't know that he was going to be far and away the best athlete to measure that kind of stuff at the combine. So I'm slightly more intrigued. Like I'm a little more motivated to go back and watch, you know, as much of the like, good film that I can find on him. And then Justin Jackson from Maryland, a freshman from Maryland. I know almost nothing about, not the guy from UNC, the kid from Maryland. I know like almost nothing about him. And he measured really well. There's a lot of buzz about him. So that's something for me that's going to like push me to go back and look at him. Were there any other names for you or any other thoughts that you had that the combine kind of sparked?
Well, I would say Jan, obviously the one that a lot of people talked about, because for me, watching him in the scrimmage, like you said, not the best environment, but I had him like really low on the previous big board that I did, the one on your site. Yeah. And I really just didn't believe in his instincts and his feel, but he had a couple of nice passes in that scrimmage, and it kind of like took me off guard. And, you know, if you have a little bit of feel and you're 7'2" and you're super mobile, yeah, and, you know, you could block shots, it's like pretty hard to fail. You know, like, yeah, it's not like you're drafting him in the lottery. Like, if you take him like late first, it's just hard to fail when you're that big and you're not completely like you could barely move, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. He was the guy that I thought was kind of the most divisive narrative to come out of the combine, right? Because I feel pretty strongly that he's garbage, that he's garbage. Obviously, he's way better than I am, right? But I feel pretty strongly that he has a career in Europe. Well, I don't even know, right? Like, why isn't he getting minutes right now if he's so good? And I wasn't crazy impressed with him last year in the FIBA stuff. All right, like, we don't have to go down that train. But, yeah, I think the combine matters for helping us to rethink stuff and go back and check up on stuff. Obviously, it can matter for some of these guys in, you know, the late first, second round guys, maybe help some guys get drafted right in the second round that were off the charts in the shuttle cones or whatever it was. But anything beyond that, I'm not convinced that anything really matters. All right, let's wrap this up. Too long, probably. I wanted to try to do just some short podcasts, but we can't get out of our own way with this analysis junk. So let's do recommendations really quickly. What do you got for us, Mike?
Well, there's a YouTube show I really like. It's called Everyday Struggle with Joe Budden and DJ Academics. It's like a hip-hop based show, almost like this one or First Take or Dunked On. It's obviously better than First Take. but yeah, if you enjoy hip-hop music, I would highly recommend that YouTube show Everyday Struggle.
Cool. My recommendation is about parenting. I'm not necessarily like some great parent. Obviously, I'm very young and I have a long way to go. But one thing that I would just say is don't stress about teaching your kid English or like proper grammar or correct pronunciations. They're going to pick all that stuff up. The human brain is wired that way. Even if you teach it to them and they're in a situation where they're going to learn it wrong, they're going to learn it wrong probably anyway. I don't know if that's true or not. But the point is that you're not the only influence on your child, and preserve as long as you can the little cute things that they do mess up. Like my kids pronounce incorrectly several words that I think is so cute. So now when I talk with them, I pronounce it incorrectly. I try to maintain that, those like little grammar mistakes that I think are so cute, as long as freaking possible, because you know those are some of the real joys of parenting. So Mike gave you something much cooler than mine. Many of you are probably not parents, but if you are, don't stress about it. Mike, thank you so much for coming on. We'll hear from you soon. Have a good one, man.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for having me.
See ya.